Welcome to Green by Nature,
the brand new podcast from Greenbelt Group, the UK's leading organisation for responsible land stewardship in new home developments. This is the place to be if you want to enjoy a deeper understanding of what's really happening in the business of house building and land management, from the vital grassroots work to the decision-making boardrooms. Every episode, we chat with industry experts and leading commentators to get to the heart of the news, views, and important events. In today's episode, we're talking biodiversity. What is it about, and why should we care? It's about protecting many different species of flora and fauna while nurturing beautiful and bountiful environments for homeowners. It's also about the long-awaited biodiversity net gain legislation, which was almost kicked into the long grass by the government, but only made it as far as January next year. So it's officially within the bounds and still in play. Now, as we wait with bated breath for the hotly anticipated small print to be published in the coming days, there are less than 2 months until full implementation. That's exciting stuff, but here's the bad news. Astonishingly, there are still no roundtable talks taking place about how BNG laws, such as the 30-year maintenance liability, will be met by house builders. Meanwhile, there's many a brow being furrowed and worry beads clutched as the industry begins to question the validity and competency of resident management companies. Yes, we're talking about the RMC, that huge, unmoving behemoth that seems harder to shift than, well, the elephant in the room. What will happen if compliant and safe solutions for dealing with BNG are not found? We believe fingers of doom will point at house builders for failures and fines. Ultimately, and we mean very soon, the sector could find itself economically embarrassed. Rather than being praised for rapid, responsible house building and all-important placemaking for communities, many house builders could find themselves in the dock, accused of the three Ds, doddering, dithering, and delaying. So what's to be done? Everything. But it's going to take experts to lead the way. And that's why today we're talking to Adam Ralph. Adam is Biodiversity and Strategic Project Director at Greenbelt Group. As someone with almost ESP on BNG, Adam has been leading the charge ahead of its ETA. FYI, he's also been calling not only for better communication around biodiversity laws, but urgent and direct action. Here's Adam.
Hi, I am Adam Ralph, and I'm the biodiversity lead at Greenbelt. It's a fairly new role that's been brought in to cover the sort of forthcoming legislation. I've been at the company for about 6 years, doing various roles in the business development team. But my background and I suppose my specialism is environmental conservation and landscape management. So it's kind of a perfect fit for biodiversity.
We're going to be going through a little bit about what your job actually entails. But when people hear your job title, biodiversity lead, what do you think they think that means? What do you think people think your job is?
I think their initial thought is that I'm maybe an ecologist, which I can sort of understand. But when you get into it, I think the biodiversity element from a management company's point of view is a much longer piece, and it's to do with stewardship and landscape contracting, landscape management, community engagement. So it's quite a varied role. The sort of the key element is around habitat management and obviously understanding the forthcoming legislation, which is that's the trickiest bit from my point of view, because there's sort of lots of ongoing research, lots of detail to get into, loads of legal stuff, which takes quite a lot of focus to understand. And all the information's not there yet. As a company, we're constantly sort of having to react to what's landing in front of us. So I think the full legislation should be out soon. It's been delayed and delayed and delayed again, but we're hoping November for lots of information, with biodiversity net gain being mandatory from January 2024. So not long to go. And I think from my point of view, I've been sort of keeping an eye on biodiversity net gain and the policy since about 2017. So that sort of shows the lead time that we've been kind of preparing and making sure that the company's ready to deliver what's needed.
We'll take it right back to the beginning. Why is biodiversity so important when you're providing open spaces on new developments?
I think for several reasons. And historically, open space has been pretty straightforward and fairly simple. So trees, a bit of grass and some sort of monoculture shrubs, so like single species of shrubs. And that's really good. And the use has been pretty much for recreation, relaxation, and a bit of social interaction. And that's all really important. But the biodiversity net gain legislation really shifts the focus, and it means we're going to benefit from much more dynamic and multifunctional green infrastructure and open spaces on site. And it will still benefit people. So people are still really an important piece of this biodiversity policy. But it also means the dynamic and multifunctional element is the wildlife and the fact it can mitigate against negative impacts of climate change. Ultimately, I think the biodiversity net gain legislation is coming at a really crucial time. I think a couple of weeks ago, there was the State of Nature Report 2023, which was released, and it still shows that there's a continuation of this decline in wildlife. And I think that's been happening since at least since the 70s in terms of this real high volume loss of species. And the reason that's happening is because of habitat destruction, often caused by intensive farming and development. So this legislation and the policy is kind of for a way to develop, for development to continue, but for the development to contribute to nature restoration at the same time, because we still need housing, but we've got to make sure that that's not at the cost of nature and wildlife. So it's enabling development to contribute to nature restoration, essentially.
You've mentioned the legislation quite a lot so far. Could you, and you've sort of touched on this as well, but could you explain some of the challenges or opportunities or both that this new legislation has brought?
Yeah, so I think challenges, there's a big list, a really big list.
It sounds like not knowing exactly what it is quite a big challenge at the moment.
Exactly. And I think the biggest one at the minute, the immediate one, is issues around the planning process and the resources that local planning authorities have to deal with this new element of legislation that will come in at pre-planning stages. I mean, it's quite a big burden. So there's a kind of a heavy admin load that needs working on. Planners historically have been sort of under-resourced, and this, I think the focus here is, are there enough planners at local authority to work through this? Because every development in England will have to deliver biodiversity net gain through planning process, and it's making sure that there's enough people to check through those documents that are being submitted to get planning permission. And again, I think the planners are relying on the finer details of the legislation, so the secondary legislation, and that's not available yet. It was supposed to be in spring this year, and then it's early summer, then late summer, and then September, and now it's November, and we've not seen any sort of final signs of that secondary legislation, which for everyone's sake, I think that's really vital from a legal point of view, from a house builder's point of view, and from a planning point of view. They need to know what they're writing their consents against. So that's just one element. I think there's a huge shift in change in terms of how a site is designed. So I think historically there's been a focus on landscape architecture-led design, which is what they've done. That's kind of what the profession is. It's creating those new spaces and designing spaces that work for people. But I think because of the focus of biodiversity net gain, ecology-led design is coming more to the forefront. And that's quite a big shift from an ecologist point of view, because they're having to get used to, I think previously they'll go to a site, do a survey, count what species are there, and the report in. Whereas now it's like, okay, you guys need to help us design biodiversity on site. So there's a big shift there. Just being able to collaborate with different design skills, I think that's, again, historically it's been even the urban planners or landscape architects, but now it's a real sort of process that needs to be led by ecologists, essentially. So it's a real it's a shift for them to get used to. And then I think from our point of view as a management company, we, or management companies as a whole, have got to get used to this kind of multifunctional open space. So it's not just about having amenity, landscape, maintenance knowledge. It's about ecology. It's about environmental conservation. It's about, yeah, the traditional amenity space management. And then a real big piece around community engagement as well. So the community understand what is being delivered on site and why that's been delivered on site and what the function is. And I think at Greenbelt, we're really lucky because we've got those skill sets across the company. And I think that's, from a management company point of view, I think that's really crucial. I think we're very lucky to have the skills we've got and the expertise we've got across the board, from horticulturalists to tree specialists to landscape management, to a really good array of skills to help deliver this for our customers, essentially. And then another challenge is homeowners' perception on site. You know, they're used to seeing striped lawns, annual bedding plants and topiary, you know, everything looks immaculate. And that's going to be a real change because habitats and ecosystems love messy edges and humans don't like that as much as they maybe should. So there's a piece around what we call cues to care. So you can still have your messy edges, but you might need to put, it could be a next to a wildflower area, for example, you could put a mown strip next to it so it looks neat and tidy. And that just helps the homeowner or the visitors to the site know that that area is not unmanaged, it's being looked after. And then I think notice boards as well, information boards saying this is a wildflower habitat area. This is what it does. This is the benefit. And it's a big shift. That's a real cultural shift in terms of what people are happy to accept on site. Mm. And I think as that evolves as well, it's going to become... you know, potential for less herbicide applications. So there might be more weeds prevalent on site. Again, historically, I think that sort of obsession with a dandelion or a weed in the corner needs to sort of loosen off a bit, because I think we'd need to get used to the fact that we can't pump sites full of chemicals because it'll have a huge impact on whatever biodiversity is on the site. So again, big sort of cultural pieces around perception of wildlife, especially in an urban area.
Yeah. Do you get the impression that homeowners are accepting this shift, or is it going to be a bit of an uphill struggle to get people on board?
I think it's going to be a real struggle, to be honest, to get people to on board. And I had this discussion last week with a group of house builders, and we were talking about the fact that show homes are still being landscaped to display this bright green lawns, bedding plants and topiary. But that's with the rest of the site potentially sort of being much wilder and sort of richer in nature. So I think there's work from a house builder's point of view there to make sure that the sales areas and the sales cabins and the sales team within those cabins are really helping to promote the idea of sort of nature on sites and the benefits of nature on sites. And then we need to carry that through. So once the developer's gone, we need to then help facilitate that continuing communication and show the residents that the benefits to these wild spaces far outweigh the sort of any negative perceptions that they've got on site of yeah, essentially it's the messy areas that I think people will have issues with. But again, if we go back to that sort of cue to care element, I think if that's done right and there's lots of information, I think people will get to grips with it. And I think also people are becoming much more aware of environmental impacts and what we need to do as a local community, as a national and as a global community. You know, everyone's got a part to play in sort of combating biodiversity loss and the climate change crisis. So people are much more aware of their impacts and what we need to do to mitigate against these impacts.
Are there any other considerations that you need to think about around delivering biodiversity net gain?
Yeah, so I think we've kind of been talking, or I've been talking very much about the delivery of on-site biodiversity net gain, but there is also off-site options to consider. So when you can't deliver all your gains within your planning or your development boundary within the open space, you need to look at where else you can deliver those gains. And that will often be on an offset somewhere or a habitat bank somewhere. The on-site and off-site argument is, it's been going on for quite a while, and it could easily be quite polarizing. I think people have concerns with off-site because you're potentially taking nature away from the community that it was supposed to sort of benefit from it, I suppose, or where that original habitat was. But ultimately, development space is going to be restricted and constrained. So I think it's a case of looking at trying to deliver whatever you can on site, whilst also striking a balance between what recreation needs there are on site, and then looking at local habitat bank options. So the closer your offsite is to your development, the better, in my opinion. The further away you go, I think, you know, your impacts in terms of nature recovery locally restricted. And there's a thing called the deframetric, which is where you measure your biodiversity values. So you get your pre-development value and your post-development value. And there is kind of a risk factor. So the further you move away from your development site, the more biodiversity units you need to deliver. So the closer, the better from an offsite point of view. And I think it's just that idea of you may need to do a bit of both. So you may need to deliver some on site and some off site. But for me personally, I think people do need to reconnect with nature. And I think that's delivering on site is a crucial element to that, because I think we're so disconnected with the environment and nature and natural processes that people have forgotten what impacts they have. And I think by putting it back locally, people can start to understand that process a bit more.
You've kind of previously answered this, and it sounds like it's around communication for homeowners, but what would be your BNG call to action for the industry in general?
We've got an amazing opportunity to do something good through development, so contributing to nature recovery, whether that's a local level or regional or national level. We've got this really good opportunity to stop damaging nature and start putting nature back. I think my call to arms is around the commitment. So committing to delivering good quality biodiversity and habitats really early on. And to do that, they need to engage with the key stakeholders. So internally, that's every department within a house builder. So from land and planning teams through to technical, to sales, to on-site construction teams, they've all got to be engaged and committed to the sort of delivery of biodiversity net gain. And then externally, it's making sure that other stakeholders are really committed and engaged. So that's your ecologists, your landscape architects, your engineers, and your management companies. So it's making sure that they're brought into the conversation really early on, and then there's this loads of collaboration, because I think there will be issues and there's going to be hurdles and barriers, but I think the more people collaborate, there'll be solutions to those barriers. And I think that's one of the concerns house builders have at the minute, is the uncertainty around these barriers and these hurdles. But once the legislation gets going and once January kicks in and we're on site and we're doing stuff, these are all problems that can be solved through collaboration, engagement with various stakeholders. I think it's a case of everyone just wants to get going now and see what barriers, because everyone's trying to guess what the hurdles are going to be or guess what the issues are going to be. And I think once we're delivering this on site, we'll see clearly what the issues are, and we can all work together to deliver really good biodiversity outcomes on site.
What is the best thing or most enjoyable thing about your job?
The best thing about my job is the variety at the minute. I'm really enjoying going out and speaking to house builders. So a lot of house builders have got grouped up biodiversity managers, and it's great speaking to them and being able to help them with problems and provide solutions. So that's kind of my favourite thing at the minute. But I also really enjoy the sort of technical elements of it, and looking at landscape management, and there's a real key piece around adaptive management, which is, it's really exciting because it moves away from this routine maintenance obligations and you sort of managing sites in a much more responsive way to what the habitat's doing or what the ecosystem's doing, which I find really exciting. So they're my favorite elements, I think.
And without getting yourself in trouble, what is the most tedious or the worst thing about your job?
By far, I think not having a radio in the office. I don't like when it's silent, so I need a bit of background noise. And I think the radio has been hidden, so I need to try and find it next time.
Sabotage in Greenbelt Group. Adam Ralph, thank you very much. That was a great insight into biodiversity net gain and why it's so important.
Thank you very much.
In every episode of Green by Nature, we'll be answering listeners' questions. Think of us as the Dear Deirdre or Just John of land stewardship. In today's episode, our question comes from Brian Galbraith, a new homeowner in Derby. Brian says, I understand the ecological importance of biodiversity and how it can combat the effects of climate change, but what does it actually mean for my development? What will it look like where I live? And back to answer the question from Brian is Greenbelt's Adam Ralph.
That's a really good question. So for your development, Brian, it means open spaces and green infrastructure is much more multifunctional. And it might look different to what you're used to. So it could be different to how your traditional open space might look. There should still be plenty of areas of amenity space for recreation. So things like areas you can go for a walk or play areas or areas for relaxation. And they'll look pretty much as you'd expect. So short grass, maybe a few trees and shrubs. But there's also going to be areas of your development that need to contribute to nature recovery. And that's through the provision of habitats for wildlife. And in order to support the widest range of species and increase biodiversity, these areas need to be quite structurally diverse and should consist of a range of, or a mosaic of different habitat types. And that could be ponds, it could be flowering lawns and wildflower areas. It could be deadwood piles, brambles and scrub through to young and mature woodland. What's really important here is something called ecotones. And this is the bit that helps all these different habitats merge together. Ecotones are often known as messy edges. And as the name suggests, these can look a bit untidy in appearance. And to the untrained eye, you might think they're a bit unmanaged or neglected. So to ensure successful delivery of on-site biodiversity net gain, it's really critical that house builders and management companies really engage with new homeowners and residents and the entire community around the development. And they've really got to work to inform them of where these habitat areas are likely to be on the development, what the function is of the habitat area, and why it might look slightly messy. And the other thing that a management company can do is use maintenance techniques to sort of frame messy edges. And this could be something as simple as mowing nice neat edges down the edge of a wildflower area, or pruning, more formal pruning of hedges next to brambles or scrubby areas. And this is a thing called cues to care. And it just helps reduce that perception that an area might be neglected. And ultimately, I think having habitats and wildlife areas on site creates this really good opportunity for community engagement. And it could be through environmental education or volunteer days. And that is really good fun. So it could be things like families helping to make wildflower seed bomb areas, or could be doing creation of bug hotels and habitat piles. And the more people are engaged with these elements of their development, the more likely they are to feel connected with and understand that really important role that nature plays in the health and well-being of us and of the planet.
If you'd like to put Green by Nature on the spot, why not email your question to info@wordshq.com. That's info, I-N-F-O, at words, H-Q, W-O-R-D-S-H-Q.com. That's all for this episode of Green by Nature. Thanks for listening.
and may your autumn fruits be mellow and biodiverse.